Welcome back to Creative Disturbance. My name is Ivan China. I'm a doctoral student at the University of Texas at Dallas. And today I have the great pleasure to discuss with Marcus Neustetter. Marcus Neustetter, good morning. Can you introduce yourself, please?
Morning. Yes, my name is Marcus Neustetter. I'm an artist, cultural activist, art and technologist, living and working in Johannesburg, South yes. Africa. Been working in the field for the last 20 years, and I'm happy to be part of this.
Okay, thank you very much. Marcus, I've been put in touch with you for Roger Malina because you're doing interesting project in South Africa. So can you tell us more about your work with the Trinity Station and your personal artwork, please?
Sure. For the last 20 years, I've been looking at the crossover of art, science, and technology. In my early days, I was, one of the first master students at the University of Witwatersrand to hand in an interactive CD-ROM that confused everyone at the time as my thesis and my practical work. And my interest has been a lot in understanding what it means to work with technology and, at the time, things that we now call social media, the kind of concept within the South African context, which is obviously politically, historically, and culturally very complex, and then how that identity followed onto the African continent, making sense of who's really got the power when it comes to the technological domain, and how, as artists and activists, we need to claim some of that and see what we can do with it. So that was the early days of me setting up projects and networks, trying to link through a thing called the Southern African New Media Art Network, link young artists and activists and designers together with each other that were experimenting using the net and technology, very often not knowing what they were doing, but rather just playing and experimenting like myself. And that led into various kinds of projects. And at the same time, my collaborator, Stephen Hobbs, with some other partners, was starting the Trinity Session, and we teamed up to look at how we can challenge the kind of cultural desolation that existed in the budgets and funding support for any kind of cultural projects by local government at the time in the year 2000. And so we formed this entity that didn't define what it was, but was rather an experimental way of getting artists and creative thinkers to work together to create new platforms and opportunities for the arts within the South African context.
Okay, thank you. But now, do you think that it was more easy to launch this kind of collaboration from South Africa than in other African countries?
Well, funnily enough, due to the cultural boycott and a lot of challenges that happened in South Africa during the apartheid times, it was seemed actually, even though infrastructurally it would have made sense that we have a strength to start it from South Africa, there seemed to have been more infrastructure or connectivity, let's call it that, between people in other countries other than South Africa. There was a kind of a big border closure of the border of South Africa to other places because of the apartheid system. So what I noticed in a lot of the research at the time is that there was communication across borders in a much more diverse way between, for example, Mozambique, Zambia, Zimbabwe, etc., that didn't exist to the South African side simply because of this history. So infrastructurally, we might have had something. But remember, we only got television in around 1976 in this country. So even infrastructurally and technologically, there were questions around how up-to-date we were. What was easier, though, in the post-apartheid South Africa, was to create the link to Europe or North America from South Africa to kind of jump over the continent and become the next flavor of the month because of our kind of branding of this new democracy, which has obviously got all kinds of problematic questions attached to it. But it was about trying to make that connection.
Okay. How... in a previous discussion, you said that you was also involved in the UNESCO Digital project for Africa. How did this project finally end up? Did it invent new platforms or to?
I think if I can answer this in a slightly roundabout way, and that is that originally I was identified because of my process with with the digital arts research that I was doing, I was identified as a so-called expert, which is a real problem when you don't consider yourself an expert. Yes. But just because I had a few people that I knew and I had some contacts and I was connected and I was online. And so when I was asked to assist with the DigiArts platform, it was already quite far in its development by UNESCO. Mm-hmm. And my biggest challenge to UNESCO and to the rest of the so-called DigiArts developers was that it was not made for third world context. You know, that the platform was all very nice and good, but its accessibility, its language, its information architecture, so to speak, was all designed around Western information system that was a common way of gathering content.
Excuse me, do you think that today Africa allows this kind of collaboration? What is the difference between back 10 years ago and today?
Look, I think we a lot of people are doing it for themselves now, and that's the difference. At the time, one needs to say one's very grateful for the fact that UNESCO did set up this platform. You know, I mean, one doesn't want to shoot it down and just say, no, it's not okay. So yeah. We tried to infiltrate it in a much more diverse way and develop a DigiArts Africa platform in collaboration with them, but which didn't go very far. But it was an attempt. But what we did learn is that today, looking back, it did set the tone for a lot of future experiments where people are doing it by themselves, like you right now, you know, connecting things and connecting opinions, connecting people, and actually creating platforms that are much more dynamic and, I guess, much more lateral than this top-down one portal for all type of attitude. And we never knew anything different, to be honest, in this country, because we were so desperate for recognition as artists working in this field. I'm talking for myself, but I know across the Southern African region, at least people that I know were desperate for recognition for what they were doing, because in their countries they weren't being recognized for the cutting edge media art that they were making, because everything came from the, as I said, the Eurocentric or Western approach. Yep. So now, hey, we can all publish it ourselves, and we can take a much more rigid stand, and we can choose who our readers and our listeners are. And our audiences are, where before it was about trying to get some kind of recognition in the main gatekeepers, which at the time were the likes of UNESCO.
So do you think that there is more difficult today, still today, to be recognized as an artist when you're from Africa?
No, I think there's two sides to it. It's probably easier to claim the African identity. It's a very problematic term to start off with, and it'll be another 10 podcasts for us to talk about that. But I think it's easier to claim I come from a place and I live in a place. I mean, I'm born and bred in South Africa. I consider this my home. I identify with the culture. I make a lot of big changes through socially engaged projects, etc., across the board, and believe a lot in the reinvestment of one's own artistic potential into a place. So I truly consider myself a patriot in one form or another, even though, you know, going to war for a country is an abstract concept, but you know what I mean. However, you know, if I've been at conferences where I've been pointed at and said, yes, but you're white, you can't talk on behalf of the African continent. And it's not that one wants to do that, but at the end of the day, the claiming a certain presence in a place, an investment in a place, is very important. And I think for artists coming from this continent, it is, and I'm really generalizing now, so I mean, one needs to be careful there, but it is a draw card, and it is a positioning tool that makes one unique, and I guess to a certain extent, in a strange way, kind of something special, which you wouldn't necessarily be if you were just in another first world hometown. So in that sense, I think for an artist to enter that space, you bring a new, unique point of view to the world from your point of view. But on the flip side, on the other side, it is very difficult to break through with more innovative thinking and working to those, as I said before, the gatekeepers or those that protect the space that they've claimed for themselves. So very often the very definitions that we look for that help us define who we are, like media art or digital art or, you know, whatever the terminologies that have come and gone, you know, from the post-colonial to the modernist, are very often dictated by those in the institutions, in the centers, that tell those that aren't in the centers what they should be or what they are. And so then it becomes more difficult to break through, even if you claim that other identity. So it's a give and take in both directions. The reason why I stay and practice and want to forever practice in this context and position myself in relation to this context is because it is really rich in inspiration, and one can actually notice that one is making a difference within one's space in one's own time. So as an artist, I might not be making the millions I could if I were successful in a big gallery somewhere in New York or whatever it is. But what I am doing is I'm noticing that I can actually affect social change in a place where it's necessary. So I think it's a different mind space and headspace to adopt as an artist.
Exactly. Thank you. I remember that you told me that you used to work in New York before.
I've had one or two projects in New York as a guest artist or as a resident. I didn't work effectively.
You make few residencies in the U.S. and in Europe.
Yeah.
So.
No, it's not. I've never actually lived or worked in another place than Johannesburg in terms of taking ownership of the place. If ever I worked in Europe and North America or places like that, or in Sao Paulo or whatever, it was for residencies, short-term projects, etc. It's more about me bringing a perspective to those places. So very often one gets invited because of one's activities and actions and points of view that one and survival strategies that one adopts within a place like Johannesburg, for example. Suddenly you get invited to New York to talk about these things at big conferences and workshops because there is a curiosity as to how do we do it and how do we survive it, because we don't have cultural funding the way other European centers do, for example. How is the Trinity Session as a company for 15 years, have we been able to survive the cultural landscape by not selling art purely, And these business strategies are what really fascinate us. So this crossover of art and business, art and innovation, art and social change does, on the one hand, feel like a way of surviving in one's own context, mm-hmm. And is a strategy for artists like myself or Stephen or a few others that we collaborate with, become a way of trying to find a new form of art economy and exchange, to take seriously the creative capital that we own and how we can translate that into something. And that is very often overlooked in a place where the systems are so entrenched and the museums and the galleries and things that are so overpopulated with audiences, which we dream for in this country. You know, there are no shows where people stand around the block to wait to get in to see an exhibition. It doesn't exist, you know, let alone museums in different parts of Africa that are falling apart. Yeah. So why do we even make art in these contexts is then the critical questions. Why are we defining ourselves as artists, as these people that work in galleries and museums? We should be taking to the art to people and asking them the question whether this is something that they actually want. So public art starts to become a very different definition. Art working with social media platforms or invading into the current communication technologies become much more exciting, because what they actually do is they don't presuppose that we all understand what art is and that we've got a definition for it. Because let's not forget, art as a concept is an imported notion by the West into most of Africa. Art is this object that's revered and that has to hang on a white wall, is not something that is innate and entrenched in the original cultural development of what artistic practice or creative cultural practice is on most of the continent. So if it's not, then what is the alternative? And what we're trying to understand at the moment in a lot of the practice of the artists that I work with, and we work with over, 800 artists in the last 15 years. It's not just two people trying to do something. I mean, it's a large machine. We're really trying to understand, where can we tap in our creative economy so that we don't just develop artists that think better or are more innovative, but actually that we develop audiences that understand what we do is valuable. Because with every art project that I do, with every web development project, artistic one I'm saying, that I'm explore, etc., I always ask the question, who is my target audience and how can I get them to take that next step of faith towards that art in its whatever form it comes, in this sense, is actually valuable for the growth of not only the individual but of a society in itself.
I have to break down this discussion shortly. But my last question will be: what are the new or current network and platform that you involve in, or you think that would be interesting to investigate in the future?
The exciting kind of platforms that are emerging and like to say disappearing is what I'm quite excited about. Is that there is it's quite a strange thing. There are things coming and going the whole time, and networks are no longer about the permanence of networks and people's permanent connection to something, but actually the acceptance that a network can come and go. And this is what I think a lot of our future network thinking is about, is that the temporary nature of networks is as important as anything else. So your Facebook group or your WhatsApp or your Mixit group or whatever it is just as important as a big UNESCO machine. Because at the end of the day, they allow for contemporary thinkers to work quickly, effectively, change their attitudes, change their opinions, and therefore also change the grouping within which they work. And the cross-disciplinary approach is therefore much more allowed. So for a performer, a video artist, and a musician, for example, to start having conversations might be meaningful for one project only, but for the next project might not be appropriate. So these networks very quickly shift and change in that way. So, yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll continue this discussion in the next podcast. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.